Time for the footy fix, and let's welcome in the team on this Monday morning. Good morning to you, Glenn McFarlane.
G'day, Gareth. How are you going, mate?
Good, thank you, mate. And hello to you, BJ Goddard.
Hello, Gareth. Macca, how are we?
BJ. And to you, first of all, Bryson, BJ, Bryson, just too strong at the US Open.
Too strong, yeah. Pun intended. Yeah, no, it was. It's said to a mate this morning that maybe, he was outstanding, but maybe it's just the wake-up call they need in terms of the distance argument. And for a US Open course, as we all know, there's setups, but to be overpowered and the bomb and gouge mentality just working a treat. For Bryson, not only Bryson, but Matty Wolff, who hit two fairways on Saturday to shoot 5 under, which sounds ridiculous when you're talking about US Open. So, yeah, incredible effort. Take nothing away from him. So just cements like all his crazy ideas in his own head and proves a lot of people wrong.
0416905052 to join our conversation with the Footy Fix here on RSN Central on this Monday. And I'll start off with you, Macca, because you're the number one Collingwood supporter these days in the country, and the Magpies take on the Power tonight. It'll shape the final setup, and I was just having a chat about this to Michael Falgate. I think the Magpies have got more to lose tonight. I think if they win, they stay in Queensland. If they lose, geez, it makes it difficult for them to head to the West and take on the West Coast Eagles.
It sure does, Gareth, and I think that's why the Pies will win tonight. I'm quite bullish on them tonight. You can get $2.30 at the tab at the moment, but so much rides on. We're thinking about this week, but so much rides on next week. So much easier to stay back in the hub, back in Queensland, to go to Western Australia and play West Coast over there. That's, you know, you cannot. I mean, they've been able to produce some amazing wins, Collingwood, over there in the past, but I can't see them doing that given what happened earlier this year. Just a quick one, guys. Travis Old needs a massive kick, doesn't he? We've had all these games rolling through with fixtures and that down to the last final. We actually don't know one locked-in final at the moment. I think it's fantastic for tonight. And Scott Pendlebury, boys, don't underestimate this. Scott Pendlebury takes over from Tony Shaw. 314 games for the most Collingwood players, and also the most captain games for Collingwood as well. He takes Nathan Buckley's record. I think there's a lot of incentive for the Pies to cause a really big upset tonight.
Where do you rate Scott Pendlebury amongst the Collingwood greats there, Macca?
He's got to be right up there when you look at it. I mean, the fact is he's won 5 Copeland trophies, and if you go back and have a look at his record, he's been placed in probably another 5 as well. He's had an outstanding record there. Obviously, personally, I rate from my memory going back, which, Gareth, as you know, goes back a long way. I rate Nathan Buckley as the best Collingwood player I've seen in my time, with Peter Dacos very close behind. Gee, Scott Pendlebury deserves to be in that third bracket from my end. You know, he almost does things by stealth. You don't realise he's doing it, but he does it. He hasn't got the spectacular nature of a Peter Dacos or a explosive nature like a Nathan Buckley. But gee, he's got to be, in my modern memory, he's got to be right up there, probably number 3 or so in my bracket.
You've had so many wonderful duels against Scott Pendlebury. BJ, what makes him such a great player?
More just because his consistency. So he's a guy that has been doing it for a long time and doing it at such a high level. So that's what kind of separates, yeah, the good, really good players to great ones. And it's about the longevity. And yeah, when you talk about him and you talk about, think of Gary Ablett Jr. and just how long they've been able to do it and perform at such a high level, and you know, big games and all that kind of thing comes with it, but it's just more the consistency of it.
And he's a player that, BJ, when he plays, he seems to have so much more time than any other player.
Yeah, well, he does, but he's not the most explosive guy. But, he's one of the best decision makers I think I've seen in football in my time anyway. So that helps. So there's not too often you get an opportunity to make, you know, a second decision or a third decision, but he somehow finds time to do that. So it's a trait that he kind of puts down to his basketball days and finding some time and space in a lot of congestion on a basketball court. So, it's been extraordinary to watch his extraordinary career thus far.
BJ, having a look at the premiership market, Richmond 325, the solid favourites now, Geelong 5, the Lions 550, Port Adelaide still at $7. But outside of the top 4, West Coast $12, Collingwood 17, The Bulldogs, $21, and the Saints are at $34. Usually we see one team per year make a splash outside of the top four and really make a move late in the season. Who do you think the best side there is placed to do just that in 2020? You there, BJ? Oh, we just lost him. We've lost him. I'll ask you, Macca.
It's a tough one, Gareth, I think, because I do rate Collingwood, but I think the Aaron Norton injury really worries me for the Dogs. I really thought they could have done some damage going through, but I think that injury concerns me from them going forward in terms of, you know, their forward power. So I probably do suggest, I mean, West Coast over there, they're going to get that one final over there in that sense as well, aren't they? So they're pretty tough. It's a line ball. I do really think this time around we're going to have the winner coming from the top four. I'm really confident that that'll happen. I can't see any of these. I can see them winning a final or two the outside the top four, but I really do think the top four are a little bit ahead of the others so far.
Okay, BJ, your thoughts? Can any of the sides in the bottom part of the eight make a late run for it?
I'm still here, boys. Sorry. I don't think so. I think Macca made mention of West Coast, so the first final over there, Bulldogs are in some form, probably in the best form of that bottom bracket at the minute. But, yeah, I totally agree. I think it's going to come from that top four. I'm surprised Brisbane, what were they? Their third favourite at $5.50,
yeah.
So I'm surprised they're not a little bit better considering the circumstance. They carried, you know, a little bit of form in, but having the luxury of obviously a grand final in Brisbane, you obviously got to get there. But just the lead in has been really good in terms of, you know, staying at home, seeing their family. So mentally, they're in a really good place. So I know Harris Andrews is a huge out, but I'm surprised they're probably not a little bit better odds.
Chris Scott, this is the Cats coach after, he was nervous. You could watch him on the Channel 7 coverage there in the coach's box as Sydney took it up to his side. And this is what he had to say after their hard-fought victory over the Swans late yesterday.
We've got confidence our guys hang in when things aren't on our terms. And so we're good enough to do that. We didn't play well early and the Swans have their game. It certainly didn't surprise us in the lead-up. Their form coming in has been pretty clear. I think the takeaway for us is AFL footy's hard, has been for a long time. It's hard to get yourself in a position as soon as you... I'm not saying we took anything for granted, but as soon as you are a little bit off, I think the gap between the best and the rest becomes pretty small. I'm not even convinced we're in the best just yet, but we've got the opportunity to prove that. We've got to start again now. We've earned the right to get to the starting line, but now we've got to do what we can to deliver.
Their big guns stood up in that final quarter, especially Patrick Dangerfield. And I thought Gary Ablett Jr., BJ, was really good in his comeback match. And I heard Jimmy Bartel and the Breakfast Club boys speaking this morning, and they're urging Gazza to play on in 2021.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's urging them?
I think Jimmy Bartel wants him to play. And I think Adam White brought it up as well.
I think White is just a fan anyway. But, although Gaz looked really good. That goal he kicked where he took off and found a little bit of zip and, you know, respectfully, I think he's dropped a few kilos whilst being at home as well. He looks in really good shape. But, yeah, Geelong, how bad were Geelong early? Jeez, they were bad. All credit to Sydney. Sydney were there to play and had nothing to lose. But Geelong, it almost as if that first quarter and a half, first half really, just said, hopefully we can sneak away with an easy victory and hopefully Sydney don't rock up today. But they were definitely there. And as you may have mentioned, the Stars stood up. They flicked the switch and they managed just to get the job done. But it's as Scotty was alluding to, it's probably not like a performance you're kind of looking for leading into finals, that's for sure.
What do you think of the Cats there, Macca? I was a little bit worried, a little bit like BJ. They just looked out of sorts mentally, especially in that first half.
Yeah, I'm sure they certainly did. There's no doubt about that. And I think you tend to find that sometimes with clubs going into the last round. I know they're you know, starting to think a little bit about finals and that as well. They desperately needed to win and clawed on to win. Obviously, I don't know whether you blokes saw Luna Enright, the daughter of Corey Enright, unplugging or changing the channel on the Foxtel with 30 seconds to go. That was one of the classic footage on social media out there now. with 30 seconds to go in the game. I think the Cats are going okay. I'm not sure how well they're playing at the moment. I'm a little bit edgy about them beating Richmond again. They need a different game plan to do that. But you've got to give Geelong amazing credit. You've got to give Chris Scott incredible credit as well. This footy club has made 18 final series out of their past 19. That's incredible value for money, isn't it, boys?
Yeah, and their top four finishes are remarkable as well, Macca.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, they're just a great club, and they get another crack at it, BJ. But they've performed well in the home and away seasons, especially the last 5 or 6 years. And despite in this generation, we're still with Selwood and Ablett and Harry Taylor. They've won 3 premierships, but they've still struggled to make it to the big dance in previous years. They've failed in the finals.
Yeah, considering, as you may have mentioned, their ability to make the top four. So it's going to be a tough ask, obviously, playing against Richmond. You may have mentioned they need a different game plan. I think it's actually a good thing that they only played Richmond in recent times, just so it's fresh in their mind. They would have, you know, reviewed that game, dissected it, see, you know, how they can improve and get better, you know, in particular against Richmond. So, yeah, look, you know, the important thing for them, Joel Selwood comes back, but they're good players, you know, Dangerfield, how good was he after half time? But and Tom Hawkins, so they're good players, are in good form. I don't think they got too much concern there. And Guthrie and Menegolu's had unbelievable seasons as well individually. So they're in a pretty good spot, but it's definitely a tough ask considering their current record against Richmond.
11 of the last 14 finishes. They're finished in the top four after the home and away season. So that is truly remarkable from a wonderful football club. Hey, well done to the Doggies. They had a wonderful end to the season. They defeated an informed Dockers up there in Cairns yesterday. They got a few injury concerns, Mitch Wallace and Aaron Norton. And this is their coach, Luke Beveridge, after the match.
It is emotional. It's been a tough home and away season. And to think we were 0-2 and probably our integrity and brand as a team was questioned back then, and rightfully so. We were a bit unstable. And you know, the boys have done an amazing job when you consider the uncertainty and the challenges of the circumstances. We believe it's a depressed fracture of the cheekbone. It's just where it is. So, you know, sometimes players can almost, you know, play the next week or definitely, you know, in 2 weeks' time. But if it's sort of up around the eye socket, it can be a bit worse. So we haven't got any confirmation on where it is, but it's pretty firm that he's got a depressed fracture of his cheekbone.
Wallace hurt in the shoulder?
Yeah, he gave a little bit of a jolt near the end there, but just spoke to him then and he should be fine.
So that was about Mitch Wallace with that last question, and he should be okay to play in the first week of the finals. But BJ, Aaron Norton, he's a big out if he can't get up for that first final for the Doggies. And just with that cheekbone injury, how difficult is it for a player, even though that it'll be sore? And do you think is it hard mentally to get up for a match like that after such an injury in just 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think so, but particularly if it needs surgery. So we've seen guys in my time, Stephen Milne, get a broken jaw, get a plate put in it and play the following week. But as Beveridge alluded to, depending on where it is, if it's close to the eye socket, they have to be more cautious with it. But yeah, it's a huge out, particularly, I think, just because they haven't been in great form. We know finals, actually, your tall forwards are, you know, match winners and make the difference in the end, particularly because the games goes a bit slower or it's more of a long kick method game because, you know, two better teams got it, better defences, you struggle to move the ball as freely as you can. But what I like too about Bulldogs, Josh Bruce actually looked like he was playing with a bit of freedom, and, you know, the more you go for, the more you get. So he was, you know, finding the footy a bit more, having more of an impact on the game. So, you know, to lose now Aaron Norton, so it's almost an opportunity for Josh Shackey, who we haven't seen for a while now, 10, 12 weeks. He's played a couple this year from memory, guys, but there's an opportunity there. So there's someone waiting in the wings, but, you know, obviously for the Bulldogs, you'd preferably have Aaron Norton out there.
0416905052 to join the conversation here. I'll get to your questions towards the end of the segment. Hey, Macca, I'll go to you now. The Saints, aren't they a great story in 2020? They had to win basically to cement their place in that top eight there against the Giants, and they smashed them. And I love the interview after the match with Jaron Geary, and he's played in a final series before, but he's led this team now after such a long time off playing finals, and he can finally lead his Saints into a final in just over a week's time now.
It's great. It's just a fantastic story, I think this is, guys, isn't it, when you look at it. Brett Ratton, if you think about him, Brett Ratton, and where he's come from in his football life and his life overall as well, he's given hope to sack coaches going forward in a sense. But, and take this, boys, on Saturday morning, so he's just finished the high of getting his team into a final in, you know, for the first time for the Saints since 2011. He sits down and he pens an email to the 150 staffers and volunteers back in Melbourne, some of them in the hub as well, basically as a letter of gratitude for helping to deliver this team through to a final series. And I just think that is the mark of a man. And that's what his connection with his players is extraordinary. He, you know, leading into that game on the weekend, he talked about bringing the group in, not just the group as a playing group, but as the staffers as well. And I think the great connection, it reminds me a lot of what Rossi Lyon had in those halcyon years with BJ and that as well. So I think the Saints are poised to hopefully win a final. Wouldn't that be fantastic? And Paddy Ryder, three finals, three losses. Wouldn't it be great to see Paddy Ryder win a final with the Saints?
That must put a smile on your face, BJ.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, with the Saints, yeah, and I'm really happy for him. So, as you may have mentioned, the Gears is a good friend of mine, and his wife as well, Em, is a good friend of Rosie and myself. So, yeah, no, it's a true reflection of a man. This is all about the team, always thinking of others. So that doesn't surprise me. But yeah, for the Saints, yeah, it'll be great. Yeah, not only just to get into a final, so they can't really just be satisfied with that. I know there's a lot of talk around and hype around, you know, the Saints community that we're back in finals, but you know, the next step is to go through and win one and go deeper into finals, which is hugely important for, you know, a youngish team and a team that hadn't played finals since 2011, I think it was. 2011, yeah, so nearly 10 years. So yeah, hugely important that they try and get a win.
Finals football's not far away, but people are already starting to talk about, or the fans anyway, especially if your side's not playing finals, about who you could get to your club next season. Joe Danaher is set to dominate the discussion regarding trade period, and this is what the Bombers coach Ben Rutten had to say about Joe's future after their loss on the weekend.
Yeah, we've had a really strong relationship over especially the last couple of months with Joe. And yeah, he'll make his decision, but we need it reasonably quickly, obviously, because things start to move once you finish the season. So he knows exactly where he stands from my point of view and the footy club's point of view. But I'm confident. I think he's, you know, I think the way he's fought back and hung in there over these last 2 years, you know, has been really difficult for him. And, you know, the level of commitment and work to get himself back. But, yeah, I just don't know. I can't answer the question. They know exactly where they sit. And if they're ready to make a decision, we're ready to roll.
All right, BJ, you've got a lot of mates still at the Bombers. Will Joe Danaher be a Bomber in 2021?
I think he will, just more so because I think even if he made the decision to leave, I think the deal would be hard to get done. So we're not sure of Sydney's interest or any other club's interest, what they're willing to cough up. You know, we know Essendon are going to play hardball, so and there's still the chance that Essendon could match any offer. So the chances of him staying are higher, but, yeah, it's the ball's clearly in his court. So it's good that Rutten came out and said that they've been, or what it sounds like, fully transparent with the players. There's no confusion of that they're wanted players, they know where they stand, you know, contracts and et cetera. So the ball's firmly in Joey's court and Saad and Arazo Fantasia by the sounds of it.
As a teammate, do you want him to make his decision this week, or do you care when he makes his decision? You're on your break now.
Yeah, not really. I think from the club's point of view, it's obviously better earlier than later because they've got more time to plan and plan ahead. So whether it is stay or leave, they've got a bit more time to prepare and talk to players and look for a, you know, contingency plan. So yeah, I think as individual players, you just you know it's going to take time, and being in that situation, it's tough to make a decision. So as a footy club, more importantly, you want them to make the decision sooner rather than later. Yeah.
All right, then this is a question from Jerry for you, Macca. Who do you think will be the trade story of the off-season?
It's going to be huge. I think it's going to be a very big trade off-season. I think Joe Danaher is certainly right there as well from a free agency perspective. And Jeremy Cameron's the one that interests me, guys. I always get concerned when players haven't, you know, big players such as Joe Danaher and Jeremy Cameron haven't actually signed a deal with their club and the season is, you know, over as well. I think that's a concern. Geelong, Brisbane and Sydney have been relatively interested in Joe Danaher. I think everyone's interested in Jeremy Cameron if he's available. I think they're going to be big. Even like you look at the Kangaroos as well, there's a little bit of a sniff going around at the moment if you think about Sean Higgins, who knocked a chance to go back to Geelong last year and signed on a two-year deal. Just wondering whether they're not going to revisit that Geelong in a chance to try and get Sean Higgins back to finish his career there. But, boys, just on Essendon, a bit of a messy sort of end to it as well. There's obviously been some concerns from a few senior players, and, boys, this is something we need to keep an eye on, that Tom Bell Chambers wasn't allowed a farewell game, as we saw Paul Puopolo come in and Ben Stratton play their farewell games. I think a few senior Essendon players, BJ, I don't know what you think about this, quite disappointed that Tom Bell Chambers wasn't given that farewell game.
Yeah, I have to get a bit more information on it. So I did speak to Tommy only a week and a half ago, so I know that he was battling to get physically ready. So I haven't had a chat to him or anyone since, so I won't make any kind of comments at the minute when I don't have enough information. But I'm happy to address that another time when I do chat.
It sounded like when I heard him on the Breakfast Club on the Friday that he was he loved the Bombers, he thanked them, and he was looking forward to maybe working with them next year, Macca.
Yeah, that was a good farewell. In the sense, I would have loved to have seen him play, but it was a good farewell the way they did it in the end to actually have him walking off with John Worsfold as well. But certainly there's been a few senior players, and I think you can probably include Cale Hooker and potentially Michael Hurley in that as well, who were a little bit miffed. You're right, BJ, he was line ball about what sort of impression he would have made in that final game. But I think a few players were just a little bit disappointed he didn't get the option to actually to see it out. So they're a fascinating watch, the Bombers in the off-season, I think, guys, aren't they? With, as BJ said, Danaher, Fantasia, Saad. What's going on with Adam Saad? But great news that Jordan Ridley wins the Best and Fairest. But, boys, Dylan Shield finishes 10th in the Best and Fairest. That's an interesting scenario in itself, isn't it?
It is, but, yeah, congratulations to Ridley. Which was sorry to cut you off there. But, yeah, remember Shield had missed. We suspended, and I think he missed a couple of games early as well. So I think there might be about three or four games that he'd missed. So, and we all know Best and Fairest, you know, you have to play. You can't miss a game, really, to finish higher in the Best and Fairest when you're probably only separated by 50, 60 votes. So you probably take that into consideration. In the games he missed, he's probably around the top five.
All right, then, this is for you, BJ. What do you think about the Richmond and Melbourne players touching each other up? I don't like the look. It's disgusting. And if they want to do this, wait till... Yeah, anyway.
I understand the current climate and the example they set, but it's not... In my opinion, it's not. It's locker room banter and it's, you know, it's a bit of boys' club, but I don't see... There's nothing in it. There's no malice in it. I understand the example it sets. There's cameras around, so... But I don't think it's that big a deal. I didn't appreciate it at the time, and I don't appreciate now the players themselves being slammed for it. It's, you know, it's a bit juvenile, but, you know, well, it's locker room banter. It's footy club. It's boys' stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen girls do it in girls' sport. So is that an issue, or is it just because it's the male thing? Are we going to talk about that, or can we bring that up? But from either side of it, I don't mind. If the individual that is receiving the act finds it offensive, then it becomes an issue for mine. So, but it doesn't seem to be the case in this on these occasions. So it annoys me a bit.
And this is from David. This is the last one before we have to go. And I can ask both of you lads here. If you had to pick a side outside the top eight that you think can make a move next year, which side would it be?
Ooh,
who gave their supporters the most hope?
Go for it, BJ.
We'll start with you. Well, go, BJ. Yeah,
I think it's still GWS. It's not the hope, but I think they'll bounce back. So, it's actually a tough one now that I'm looking in depth. But I'll say Carlton. Carlton will play finals next year.
Yeah, it's a big call. I think Melbourne's still a chance to play finals next year if everything goes right. But, boys, the one that I think can make a sharp jump, maybe not next year, but certainly the year after, I'm a bit bullish about Fremantle. I really like the coach. I think he's an outstanding coach going forward. I like the way he's putting that list together. It may be an extra year away, but I think they'll be pushing for next year, maybe certainly the year after.
Yeah, I agree with you, Macca. I think the Dockers might be the big movers in 2021. As always, lads, thanks for your time and look forward to catching up with you next week to take a look at week number one of the AFL finals.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome, mate. See you.
There's BJ Goddard and Glenn McFarlane for the Footy Fix. Trent Langs.